You know, it's kind of funny when you think about it. Podcasts, we listen all the time.
Part of daily life for so many.
Exactly. And it feels like they've just always been there. But turns out there's a whole backstory.
Oh, yeah.
Get this, maybe even a prehistory, something called audio blogs, potentially way back in the 80s.
Wow, the 80s. That's earlier than I'd have thought.
Right. So today we're doing a deep dive, really getting into how this all kicked off.
Okay.
You sent over some really interesting stuff, Wikipedia, some personal accounts too.
Yeah, I'm trying to piece together the puzzle.
Our mission, basically, is to unpack the start. You know, how did it happen? Who were the key players?
That's good. It's often a mix of tech shifts and the right people being in the right place.
So we'll look at the tech seeds, this big moment in 2003 at Harvard, and how a few key people sort of converged.
That sounds like a solid plan. It's definitely a fascinating convergence.
Okay, so this audio blog idea, what even was that? Sounds a bit old school now.
Well, yeah. The sources point to around October 2000. A developer, Dave Weiner.
Yeah, involved with RSS, right?
Yeah.
Really simple syndication.
Exactly. He's big in RSS. And apparently, he made it possible to attach audio and video files to RSS feeds.
Why? Just out of the blue.
Seems like users were actually asking for it, for audio blogging, that specific term.
Interesting. People wanted to add voice to their blogs even then.
Yeah. And it seems that Weiner was talking about this idea, the enclosure concept, with Adam Curry.
Yeah, Adam Curry from MTV.
That's the one. Which is kind of wild thinking back.
So even back then, people saw a need to get audio out there alongside text.
Seems so. Weiner adding enclosures to RSS was like the fundamental plumbing needed.
Okay, plumbing. I like that. It let you attach the actual file.
Right, not just link to it, but include it in the feed that people subscribe to.
And talking to Curry early on, that hints they saw media potential, not just tech.
I think so. Curry obviously knew media. It wasn't just code, it was, how could people use this?
Okay, let's jump forward. 2003. This year keeps coming up, especially around Harvard, the Berkman Center for Internet and Society.
Yeah, that seems to be ground zero almost. Dave Weiner was actually a fellow there then.
Right. And there was this conference, OSCOM, Open Source Content Management.
At Harvard that spring. Sounds like a real meeting of minds.
You've got Weiner, this key web tech guy.
Talking to all these developers who are building the tools for the web. Yeah, open source is really taking off.
And other Harvard people got involved, Professor Charles Nesson.
Head of Berkman, yep. And Bob Doyle, an astrophysicist, but also an information
The
philosopher.
astrophysicist. Okay, unexpected.
Yeah. And his group, the desktop video group, was actually filming the OSCOM talks.
Filming them. Interesting, capturing content even then.
Exactly. Which leads to another connection.
This is where it gets good. Doyle from filming OSCOM connects with Christopher Lydon.
Ah, Leiden, a big name in Boston media.
Huge. Former TV guy, then had that massive WBUR radio show, The Connection. Very respected interviewer.
But he wasn't at WBUR anymore by then, was he?
No, that's the twist. He left after some dispute about, like, who owned the online rights to his show's content.
Ah, the classic digital rights issue, even back then.
Exactly. So he lands as a fellow at the Berkman Center, too.
Wow. So Weiner's there, Leiden's there, Doyle's involved.
It's like all the ingredients were suddenly in the same pot.
That's often how it happens, isn't it?
Yeah.
Different skills, different backgrounds bumping into each other.
Leiden, probably looking for a new way to distribute his work after the WBUR thing.
Must have made him really open to Weiner's internet-centric ideas. You
Yeah.
had the tech guy, the content creator, and someone bridging the gap with production know-how like Doyle.
Then Weiner holds this meeting, BloggerCon, also in 2003, a big blogger meetup.
Right.
And Weiner apparently says to Leiden, hey, you should start a blog, you know, get your voice back out there.
Makes sense. Use the new tools.
But Leiden's reaction apparently was more like, well, writing's fine, but my thing is audio, my voice.
Understandable, given his radio background.
So Weiner says, okay, let's talk to Bob Doyle, his desktop video group. Let's explore this audio blogging thing seriously.
So the push wasn't initially, let's invent podcasting. It was more.
More like, how can we add Chris Lydon's audio interviews to a blog?
Enriching the existing format, Weiner saw the potential, connecting Leiden's talent with Doyle's technical setup. That seems like the real spark.
And Doyle really ran with it, didn't he? Starting around July 2003.
Oh, yeah. The sources say he researched everything, portable recorders, editing software, compression, the whole toolkit.
And then taught Leiden how to use it all.
Personally taught him, yeah.
Help.
And even launched a website. blogaudio.org.
Blogaudio.org. Wow.
Yeah, specifically to document how they were doing it, how to add audio to blogs. Very open source spirit.
And he built Leiden a custom setup. Chris Leiden's portable web studio.
That's what they called it. It sounds incredibly DIY.
Totally. Imagine Leiden going from professional studios to this portable rig.
But Doyle made it work. He demystified the tech, empowered Leiden. That was crucial, sharing it on Blog Audio too.
Yeah.
Very collaborative.
And Leiden just jumped in, producing, what, over 50 interviews himself?
Yeah, pretty prolific right off the bat. He'd write up descriptions on a Harvard weblog wiener setup.
And the actual audio files, where did they live?
Linked from Bob Doyle's server, apparently. Skybuilders.com.
Okay, so the blog post was on Harvard's site, audio hosted separately.
Seems so. And Leiden was apparently really happy with the sound quality he was getting.
Even compared to his radio days.
Yeah, there's a quote, like, he'd never sounded so good. Which is amazing, given the gear.
Maybe it was the intimacy. Or just the control he had.
Could be. It definitely showed the tech was getting good enough, even portable stuff. Maybe a shift away from super polished production towards, I don't know, more authentic chat.
Okay, so Leiden's making audio. But how do people get it easily? This leads to another Wiener step, right?
Absolutely key. Wiener created a special RSS feed for Leiden's blog.
But with those enclosures enabled.
Exactly. The blog had been text only. Now, this feed could carry the actual MP3 files of the interviews.
And Leiden starts posting these deep interviews.
And Wiener announces the new feed on his own blog, which lots of tech people read.
And he challenged other developers, the people making feed readers or aggregators.
Yeah, he basically said, hey, support this. Support enclosures. Make it easy for users to get these files.
That feels huge. Taking it from a personal blog thing to a potential distribution channel.
Totally. It was the mechanism for automatic delivery. Wiener was essentially creating a new broadcast channel anyone with the right software could subscribe to. Democratizing it.
Which brings us to the October 2003 BloggerCon, back at Harvard, sometimes called the first podcasting conference.
Seems like a key event, yeah. They were actually handing out CDs.
CDs, really?
Yeah, with Leiden's interviews on them. Like tangible examples of these MP3 enclosures.
Huh, old school meets new school.
And Bob Doyle was there, showing off Leiden's portable studio setup.
Demoing the tech.
Right. And someone named Harold Gilchrist gave a talk on the history of audio blogging.
Even mentioning Adam Curry's early involvement way back.
Connecting the dots. And then the big one, Kevin Marks.
What did he do?
He demoed a script, a simple piece of software.
Okay.
That could automatically download the audio files from an RSS feed with enclosures.
Uh-huh.
And put them straight into iTunes to sync to an iPod.
Whoa. Okay, that's the missing link for usability, right?
Massive leap. iPods were exploding in popularity, getting audio onto them easily. That was the game changer for listening on the go.
And Adam Curry was at that BloggerCon.
He was, and apparently visited Bob Doyle's group too.
What was his angle? Why was he so interested?
Personal frustration, it seems. He couldn't easily listen to archived talk radio shows on his commute.
Huh, a problem many of us have had.
Totally. So he'd started building his own software to automatically grab shows off the web and onto his iPod.
Solving his own problem first.
Exactly. And then, connecting with Wiener and seeing Marx's demo, he worked with them, refined the RSS approach for audio attachments.
Really focused on that iPod user experience.
Making it automatic. Subscribe, download, sync. That's what the source material calls the start of the explosive phenomenon of podcasting.
And it makes sense. Automation and ease of use on a popular device. That's the recipe.
Pretty much. Wiener built the foundation. Curry built the user-friendly bridge to the iPod. Powerful combination.
But like all good origin stories, there are wrinkles, right? Different perspectives.
Oh, for sure. It wasn't perfectly linear. Wiener, for instance, he shares his memories of Leiden's early stuff on his own site.
Okay.
But then Leiden did an interview with Wired.com later.
Yeah.
Where he seemed to maybe downplay the role of Doyle's desktop video group and Skybuilders, the hosting place.
Really? Who did he emphasize?
More the Berkman Center itself.
Yeah.
As the like intellectual hub.
Huh. So focusing more on the ideas than the nuts and bolts.
Maybe. It's common, right? People remember the parts they were most involved in or the environment that sparked things for them.
Doesn't mean the tech support from Doyle and the hosting weren't vital, though.
Absolutely critical in those first few months. Just different angles on the same story.
And then Leiden gets courted by Minnesota Public Radio.
Yeah, NPR was already looking at internet stuff. They offered him a new show, open source.
Which is still going, right? As radioopensource.org.
Still going strong. It's interesting this digital-first experiment led back to a more traditional broadcaster, the one that fully embraced the digital side, too.
Shows the value was recognized beyond the early tech crowd.
Definitely. His style, the format, it worked. And it showed how online experiments could feed back into, and maybe change, traditional media.
And Lydon himself has a specific first podcast moment in mind.
He does. He points to his interview with Dave Weiner back in July 2003.
Okay, the very early days.
Hosted on Bob Doyle's server, he says. And he suggests those early RSS-fed interviews were what Adam Curry got on his iPod in Europe.
And that's what sparked Curry to create his iPodder software.
That's Lydon's narrative, that his shows directly inspired Curry's software.
So everyone sees the spark starting from a slightly different point.
It really highlights how collaborative, maybe even a bit chaotic, it was. Not one single invention, but steps building on each other.
And we should mention Doug Kay's IT conversations started around July 2003, too.
Right, another early player. Maybe the term podcast itself took a little longer to stick. Maybe Curry's naming helps cement it later.
One last piece later in 2003, before the 04 election.
Yes.
Sterling Newberry and Matt Stoller launched specific websites for Lydon, the Blogging of the President and BOP News.
Ah, yeah, the sources mentioned that. Also hosted on those SkyBuilder servers.
Shows they were already applying this to politics and news commentary.
Absolutely. Yeah. Foreshadowing the huge variety of podcast genres we have now. And again, SkyBuilder's quietly humming away in the background, providing the hosting.
Okay, so wrapping this part up, it really feels like podcasting wasn't just one thing.
No, definitely not. It was a confluence.
You needed the tech advances like RSS getting enclosures thanks to Weiner.
Yep, the foundation.
You needed someone with real audio chops and content like Lydon.
The voice in the interviews.
You needed the practical, user-focused problem solving of Curry, making it easy to listen on the go.
Bridging that gap to the iPod, crucial.
And the early days. Sounds like a mix of collaboration, experimentation, maybe a bit of chaos, judging by the different memories.
Exactly. Productive chaos, though. It wasn't neat, but it worked.
What strikes me, the real aha, maybe, is how it started small.
Yeah.
Like Curry just wanting to listen to radio shows on his commute. That simple frustration.
Mm-hmm. A personal itch that needed scratching.
And scratching that itch, combined with everything else happening, led to this huge global thing we have now. It wasn't some grand corporate plan.
Not at all. Grassroots innovation, really. People yeah. playing with the tools they had to solve problems or share ideas.
Which really makes you think, doesn't it? Considering these, you know, slightly messy, contested origins.
Yeah.
What's happening now? What little frustrations are people trying to solve today with audio tech?
Good question.
Could there be some unexpected, maybe kind of weird experiments going on in someone's garage or some online forum?
That might just accidentally spark the next big shift in how we create or listen to audio.
Exactly. What's the next audio blog or the next iPodder waiting to happen? Yeah. Definitely something to mull over.